I tried eating the test they gave me to become a lawyer. I threw up. So I guess this isn't my first time spitting bars. As I sit in the office where I author the law, I take a look at the nation, and I say there's nothing wrong, cause I've been blundering and gapping so long. Even my son Hunter thinks my mind is gone, but I never sniffed a child who didn't deserve it. You be passing up these scents, that's what's really perverted. If you ever cross my path, you ain't got a prayer, cause me and my homies gonna be smelling your hair. Printing lots of money, killing pipelines, making sure the nation's locked until the end of time. Gonna give the country over to Xi Jinping. I guess that's what I meant when I said no malarkey.
Spend too much of our lives living in Biden's paradise. Everything's twice the price living in Biden's paradise. Till 2025, we're all stuck in Biden's paradise. Spend too much of our lives living in Biden's paradise.
Check out the situation. Hyperinflation, print another couple trillion and destroy the whole nation. And I'm not going down to the border, fool, unless those migrant kids are using their shampoo. I'm a career politician with a senile mind. I can't finish this sentence, I've got blood in my eye. But damn, I'm important. I made a fortune selling you out to China. Yeah, your job's been exported, fool. Death ain't nothing but a heartbeat away. And Kamala Harris is counting down the days to 2023 or 24. Will I make it that long? I don't know. Tell me why are they so blind to see that, you know the thing.
Spend too much of our lives living in Biden's paradise. Everything's twice the price living in Biden's paradise. Till 2025, we're all stuck in Biden's paradise. Spend too much of our lives living in Biden's paradise.
Hey folks, thank you so much for watching. This video took myself and my team well over 100 hours to create. And because of the music bed, it's not eligible for any kind of monetization on YouTube. We won't make a penny off of it. So if you want to help us make more cartoons like this, please donate at patreon.com/freedomtoons. And get access to cool behind the scenes stuff. Thank you so much.
It now appears there actually was meaningful voter fraud in Fulton County, Georgia last November. That is not a conspiracy theory. It's true. From the beginning, this show has tried to be fact-based when we talk about the 2020 election results. So here's what we know tonight, factually. At least 36 batches of mail-in ballots from the November election were double-counted in Fulton County. That's a total of more than 4,000 votes. Those numbers come from a group called Voter GA, which along with Bob Chile sued to get them. The final tally from the double counts we know about amounts to more than 3,300 votes for Joe Biden and 865 votes for Donald Trump. Now, before you dismiss Bob Chile and Voter GA as dishonest partisan actors, keep in mind that the strongly left-of-center Atlanta Journal-Constitution appears to agree with this, at least in outline. The newspaper reviewed the available digital ballot images independently and concluded that hundreds of ballots were improperly duplicated. What does that look like exactly? Well, here's what it looks like. At a press conference yesterday, a consultant with Voter GA called David Cross showed how we can be certain that votes in Fulton County were counted more than once. Watch.
What I'm going to show you here is two ballots side by side. One of them is marked for Jason Shaw, and it's got a little squiggle mark next to it. You can see it's got the identical mark on the second one. And the ballot image is stored up here on the top left. So this one over here is scanner 5162, that's scanner number 3, fax number 235, image number 19. And that matches 234, image 59. So you have the same ballot counted twice in the images and counted in the audit. How that's possible, I don't know.
How's that possible? I don't know. Every American should want to know, because the answer gets to the heart of the integrity of our elections, otherwise known as our democracy. We're not talking about a couple of ballots here. We're talking about a lot of ballots, at least hundreds of ballots involved, enough potentially to affect the outcome of the election. Here's another example.
Here's one of the next ones. All right, so same facts, number 234, image number 2, and 235, image number 61. Republican, 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 all the way down to the point where this little spot up in Fannie Willis matches this one over here. There's no question that that ballot was counted twice.
So what's the explanation for this? Well, if you ask Fulton County, these discrepancies, the ones you just saw on the screen, were isolated incidents, just a handful of bad ballots. Happens all the time. The county claims that any errors were caught in previous recounts. The problem is that neither one of those claims is true. Surveillance footage obtained by Voter GA appears to show large numbers of ballots being scanned multiple times. Pay attention in the tape we're showing you to the woman wearing yellow at the desk. According to Voter GA, she slides ballots into a scanning machine, removes the ballots, and then reinserts the same ballots. This happens multiple times. The question is, how many times were those ballots counted? Was each vote counted more than once? Fulton County won't answer that question. Now, one way to know the answer would be to check what are called audit tally sheets. Tellingly, for months after the presidential election, Fulton County failed to provide more than 100,000 of those tally sheets, including 50,000 of them for mail-in ballots. When Voter GA finally forced Fulton County to turn over the tally sheets, the conclusion was stunning. Here's what the audit found. Quote, 7 falsified audit tally sheets containing fabricated vote totals. For example, a batch containing 59 actual ballot images for Joe Biden and 42 for Donald Trump was reported as 100 for Biden and 0 for Trump. The 7 batches of ballot images with 554 votes for Joe Biden, 140 votes for Donald Trump, and 11 votes for Joe Jorgensen had tally sheets in the audit falsified to show 850 votes for Biden, 0 votes for Trump, and 0 votes for Jorgensen. Wait, did you just follow that? How is that not flat-out criminal fraud? We'd love to know, because it certainly sounds like flat-out criminal fraud. We've obtained photographs showing what went on during the recount process for mail-in ballots in Fulton County. These pictures were taken by a whistleblower who participated in the recount. She said she noticed something odd as she did. None of the ballots that she saw had any creases on them. You can see the stacks of unfolded ballots on your screen now. That's strange because, of course, mail-in ballots need to be bent in order to be mailed in. These ballots clearly had never been inside an envelope. And then the whistleblower noticed something else. All of the ballots, the whistleblower tells us, have been filled out by a printer, not by hand. And many of them supported the exact same candidates, Democrats, including Joe Biden. Voter GA detected a series of other apparent irregularities in the recount. The group's audit found, for example, that, quote, over 200 Fulton County mail-in ballot images contained votes that were not included in the hand count audit results for the November election. Now, why is that? We don't know. Keep in mind, once again, the results in the state of Georgia were decided by fewer than 13,000 votes. It was a close race. Every vote mattered. And then there's this. An elections expert called Mark Davis analyzed data from the post office. He found that nearly 35,000 Georgia voters moved out of their county of residence more than a month prior to Election Day. They were ineligible to vote, and yet they did. They still voted in their old county. That is illegal. It's not a small thing. Violating election law is something we should care about. And by law, their votes should have been excluded from the total, but they were not excluded. Why are we okay with that? Why are we okay with any of this? Well, we're okay with it because we've been told we have to be okay with it. We're undermining democracy if we ask questions about what happened during the 2020 election. And of course, that's a perfect inversion of the truth. Without answers to legitimate questions like the ones we just posed, and those are legitimate questions, democracy dies. People begin to understand that the system they've been told is on the level is in fact rigged. And when they believe that, God knows what they do next. So let's find out what actually happened. Let's find out immediately. Let's find out without shame. It's our right to know. It's our responsibility to know.
My next guest is a good, dear friend, an amazing patriot. I think he's the closest we have in the conservative world to a William F. Buckley today. To say he's a talk show host is kind of an insult. He is a scholar, which is also kind of an insult. He's the good kind of scholar who knows the truth, can see the patterns, and can see a path forward and shows us how to fight back. If he were a founding father, I think he would be John Adams. Welcome to the program, Mr. Mark Levin.
Wow, I should come on more often. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So you have a new book out called American Marxism, and I got a lot of questions about it. It's an excellent, excellent book. You don't need me praising it to sell it. But you go into the revolution that is happening right now, and you say, I mean, your first chapter is, it's here. Could you do me a favor? I want you to talk to somebody who is not engaged in daily politics. They don't listen to us. They're still being led by their feelings. They think they're doing good by being anti-racist, or they think they're being good by standing up for all the things that these Marxists are standing up for. Convince them that this is happening, it's real, and it's going to destroy all of us.
This is a great question, and it's really the embodiment of the entire first chapter. And the title, American Marxism. First of all, we who do understand what's taking place have got to stop being intimidated. This isn't progressivism or social activism or democratic socialism. This is Marxism. Mm-hmm. It may not be Marxism in every particular, but it is an Americanized form of Marxism. Now, how do we know that? Because they tell us that. That's what their people write about, their founders in the 60s and 50s and 40s and even in the 70s. So what I would say to my audience too, what I would say to people is, first of all, you need to pay attention to what's taking place. Secondly, you need to turn off CNN and MSNBC and stop reading the New York Times and the Washington Post. Thirdly, you've seen it with your own two eyes. You saw the riots all summer long. You saw Black Lives Matter, which is headed by proud Marxist. You see Antifa, which is a Marxist anarchist organization. You see the media that you have been watching and reading endorse every single one of these movements. There's not a distinction of any kind between what happens on television and what Black Lives Matter is promoting or even Antifa is promoting. And they also cover up the violence or try to dismiss it. Mm-hmm. Same with the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party, talk to them. Say, don't you believe in an independent judiciary when you go to court? Do you want politicians sitting on the bench or do you want judges sitting on the bench? Well, the Democrats want politicians sitting on the bench. They want to destroy separation of powers. They want to destroy the functioning of the Senate by packing it with Democrats. They want to destroy the way the legislative process works. So even if it's 50-50 in the Senate or a 4-vote majority in the House, they can fundamentally alter our constitutional system. Do you like the money you earn? Do you like the home you own? Do you like the community you're in? Well, Joe Biden has signed executive orders to destroy all of it with his attack on the suburbs and also in the cities. Do you like your local school system? Do you like where your kids are being educated? Crime infested. Kids aren't graduating. They're not going on to college. Why do you tolerate that? Well, the Democrats are preventing us from having school choice. They're preventing us from having any form of freedom and competition in the inner cities. And so I would explain this on a level that apparently the Republican leadership cannot explain it. The book tries to do that. Look, this is a unique book for me. It's at three levels. One, there's heavy scholarship, but I explain it. So I might take a paragraph from one of them and then have a paragraph explaining it.
Right. And you need to do, I thank you for that, because if you read Marx, it's I mean, mind-boggling how ridiculous and convoluted I think it is.
The other thing is, he destroys the idea of an individual, and you're talking to an individual. You say, you know, you lead your own life, you have your family if you do, you have your career that you want, there are things you like to do. Well, when it comes to Marx, he eliminates all that. You have to work for the state. It's what the state wants. Mm-hmm. He believes that you have to surrender your liberty, you have to surrender your property to the best interests of the state. And what's the state? Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and faceless bureaucrats who don't even know who you are? You're going to surrender your life and your family? It's a form of involuntary servitude. That's what Marxism is. So basically, we have to people have been brainwashed, or as I say in the first chapter, people have not been paying attention, or they view this as a passing fad. And I try to make the case in the first chapter, no, it's not. And we all need to wake up to this. And if we have little differences, moderate Democrats and libertarians and so forth, you better put them aside right now, because we have a common enemy. I say enemy, not opponent, not adversary, enemy. And we need to be focused on defeating that enemy rather than fighting among ourselves. You know, a footnote on this, Glenn, because, you know, you're a man of faith. I'm a man of faith. I think of the Second Temple in Israel and Jerusalem. And while the Romans for four and a half years were attacking the temple, trying to slaughter the Jews, they were fighting among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They were fighting among themselves. As they were being attacked, they were attacking each other. While the temple fell, there's no guarantee that this country will survive as a free country. We're not looking into the abyss now. We're in the abyss. And we have to figure out how to claw our way out. And so, not to jump ahead, this book is six chapters of explanation and one chapter of activism. For me, it's a very unique book in the way that I wrote it. I think it's by far my most important book, given what's going on today. But you look at the attack on the cops. You look at Soros with the prosecutors. You look at phony bail reform. You look at the open border. All these things are intended to destroy our system, destroy our culture, destroy our tradition, destroy our mores. Now, if that's not Marxism, what the hell is it?
So let me ask you, because you go into this in depth, and I can't thank you enough for, you know, the Cloward and Piven mentions in there.
You're the guy that really, let me just give you a little kudos here. You're the guy that brought them to my attention, to most of the countries. And the husband's dead, and she hates your guts, by the way.
Oh, I'm very well aware of that. Very well aware of that. I wear it as a badge of honor. But you go into all of this, and I think, Mark, that there are two things going on. And I think that what is so strange that people can't figure out what they're like, what is happening? Because you have giant corporations involved in this and Marxist. Well, those two don't go together. And I think the elites, the real elites, the very, very wealthy corporations and people like Klaus Schwab, I think that they are using these Marxist revolutionaries as useful idiots. They're going to destroy it, and we'll be there with the answer. And it won't be what the Marxists want.
I have a little different take on this.
Okay.
I think, and either of us could be right, because who knows?
I know.
But I think these corporations have decided that the other side's going to win. And these are not capitalists, they're corporatists.
Yes.
And you see them, they operate in China.
Mm-hmm.
They operated during the Third Reich. And because China needs them and the Third Reich needed them, as long as they behave as they demand. And I think a lot of these corporatists are no different. And that is this. They believe the Democrat Party, they believe the culture, they believe it's all been conquered. And rather than face the wrath, they're going to throw in with them. They'll pay the higher taxes. They'll deal with the regulations. And they will use them to help crush their opponents,
mm-hmm.
which is what they're doing, which mm-hmm. is what the Democrat Party is trying to do with the voting rules with the Republicans. And they'll use them to crush their opponents. And because for the Democrat Party, Glenn, it's about the Democrat Party, like a Marxist party. What is China? It's the Communist Party. What is Cuba? It's the Communist Party. What is North Korea? It's the Communist Party. The country's irrelevant. The people don't matter.
Right.
The power's in the party. Well, what is the Democrat Party trying to do? You're going to have Joe Biden, who's going to go on about Jim Crow and attack these Republican legislatures, because that's all that stands between them and absolute control of this country. They did it in California. They've done their experiments in different states. Now they want to nationalize the process. So it doesn't matter if you vote. It doesn't matter. The state legislature is a Republican. They are going to nationalize it. They're going to have one-party rule because the power, the authority, the allegiance is to the party.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you.
Corporations, I think, see this.
Let me ask you about CRT. You've got a whole chapter on CRT, but you go into LatCrit, which most people don't even know about, and it is this. It's going to be the same argument that they're using now on CRT, which is, oh, that's just an obscure legal thing. It's not really even anything. Can you talk about LatCrit and also CRT? And because you call it out as evil.
It's so obscure, they're obsessed with it, and they're teaching it everywhere.
Yeah.
LatCrit, look, they talk about intersectionality, and this is the way they pull in all these Marxist movements that have been spawned from Marxism. They're American Marxist movements, Americanized movements. And I explain in the book a guy by the name of Herbert Marcuse, who was a Marxist in Berlin. After World War I, the communists and the fascists were fighting. Hitler took over. He couldn't understand why the proletariat didn't rise up. And you'll notice something. The proletariat never rises up. It's always a cabal or a third or whatever it is of the population taking charge. There is no rising up of any proletariat bottom. There's no proletariat in this country rising up. It's the middle class. Do you think the middle class wants to overthrow the government? No. So anyway, this guy was trying to he escapes Germany, comes to the United States. He winds up working for three different Ivy League colleges where he's tenured. And he's spreading this Marxism crap, and he can't figure out. And so he comes up with critical theory, the Franklin School, all these Marxists, and he's the lead. Critical theory, which is spawned in our law schools, Harvard, Stanford, and so forth, which is all law is corrupt. Now, why is it corrupt? Because it needs to be viewed through the eyes of those who've made it and not the victims of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's another professor by the name of Derek Bell said, this is a great idea. I'm going to apply that to race. That is, you have to view everything through race. And because we have this white dominant society, everything wrong in this society, everything right, of course, is as a result of the minorities, but everything wrong is a result of the majority. And so it's this white dominant culture. If we don't destroy this, then there'll never be equity. And they reject a colorblind society. They reject Martin Luther King. They despise the whole civil rights movement.
That's crazy.
As Marx despised socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said these halfway measures are stopping the revolution. So it comes from him. It comes from this guy, Derek Bell. And what it is, what does Marx say? Destroy history. Don't the world begins today. Destroy history. The monuments come down. The books are burning. We're going to brainwash our kids in school on race. They're really being brainwashed on Marxism. And you have some very smart people showing up at these school board meetings, and they're pointing it out. And we need to have the guts not to be intimidated to call what it is.
Welcome to the Ship Gold Friday Gold Wrap, your overview of this week's precious metals news. It's Friday, July 16th. I'm your host, Mike Meharry. Thanks for tuning in. So when you were a little kid, did you ever make up a story? You know, maybe it was based on something that actually happened, but you embellished it, or maybe you just made it up completely. And then the story starts to fall apart. You know, people notice little inconsistencies in what you're saying, or, you know, maybe somebody who was there starts calling you out. But being a little kid, you're going to stick to your story. Like, you're going to hold on to that story for dear life. I distinctly remember doing this with my friends, trying desperately to convince them that my story was true. You know, I think at some point, I almost convinced myself that it was true. That's pretty much where Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell seems to be right now. He's made up this transitory inflation story, and by God, he's sticking to it. Unfortunately for Powell, the data is calling him out. So this week we got the June Consumer Price Index data, and for the sixth month in a row, it came in way hotter than any of the experts projected. The CPI surged 0.9% month on month in June. It was the biggest monthly price increase of the year, blowing away expectations of a 0.5% increase. Now, stop and think about that number for a minute. Prices rose nearly 1% in a single month. The headline CPI number bandied about in the mainstream media was the 5.5% year-on-year increase. The consensus was for a 5% gain. It was the biggest yearly jump in the CPI since August 2008. Core CPI, that strips out the more volatile food and energy prices, rose 4.5% year-over-year. This also blew away projections for a 3.8% rise. It was the sharpest upward move in core CPI since September 1991. On a monthly basis, core prices also rose 0.9% against estimates of 0.5%. So not only did all of these numbers come in higher than expectations, they came in above the upper range of expectations. Looking back over the year, consumer prices have gone up more than expected every single month. The CPI in January was up 0.3%. It was up 0.4% in February. It rose 0.6% in March, 0.8% in April, and 0.6% in May. So we had that little bitty tick down in May, and some people were thinking, oh, well, maybe this is starting the downward trend. But then we got the 0.9% for June. If you add up the CPI gains through the first half of the year, the inflation rate comes to 3.6%. You will note that is just a tad above the 2% Fed target. If we simply duplicate this trend through the second half of the year, we're looking at CPI of over 7%. Now, sometimes you'll hear people claim that inflation really isn't that big of a deal because wages rise also. So, you know, it kind of balances out in the wash. And in the long term, I guess it does. But right now, you're getting hosed. According to the Labor Department, the big hike in prices translated to a decrease in real wages. Real average hourly earnings fell 0.5% in June as the 0.9% CPI increase more than wiped out the 0.3% rise in average hourly earnings. So in other words, you can't buy as much stuff this month as you could last month. As I said, you're getting hosed. CPI wasn't the only inflation data that came in hotter than expected. Producer prices charted the biggest gain in over 10 years. Year on year, the producer price index surged 7.3% last month. That was the biggest year on year rise since November 2010 and followed a 6.6% advance in May. Month on month, PPI was up a full 1% against expectations of a 0.6% gain. Now, to hear Powell tell it, these price increases are transitory, right? So at some point, we should see the consumer price index start coming down, right? The increases should slow. But if the producer prices are telling us anything, it's that there's a pretty good chance consumer prices may actually accelerate even faster as we move toward the end of the year. Because at some point, the producers are likely going to throw in the towel and pass these higher costs onto the consumer. There's a 1.8% gap between producer and consumer prices right now. So it's not unreasonable to expect we could have 10% CPI by the time we get into December. Here's a final interesting tidbit on rising prices. According to the National Federation of Independent Business, 47% of small businesses raised average selling prices in June. That's the highest since 1981. So we're seeing inflation numbers that look a lot like the 1970s. And in fact, it might even be worse. You'll recall in a past episode, I talked about how the government changed the CPI calculation back in the 1990s. They claimed that the old way overstated inflation. So if we were using the formula they used in the 1970s, we'd be seeing even bigger numbers today. And here's another reason to think that this inflation business might not be so transitory after all. Financial analyst Wolf Richter said that this transitory inflation is actually turning into an inflationary spiral. He acknowledges that you can pin some of the price increases on supply issues and the sudden spike in demand as economies have opened up post-pandemic. But the rising prices are cascading from product to product and service to service, creating inflation expectations that will eventually get baked into the economy. I'll link to an article in the show notes page that digs a little bit deeper into this whole idea. So how did the markets react to this news? Well, pretty much the opposite of what you would expect. Gold initially sold off on the CPI data. It dropped about 10 bucks almost immediately. Now, it did recoup its losses later in the day, and we're actually trading at about 18.20 an ounce right now. But the yellow metal certainly doesn't reflect expectations of persistent inflationary pressures. Meanwhile, the dollar charted its best daily percentage gain in nearly a month after we got hot inflation data. Now, think about that for a moment. If the dollar is losing value, the logical reaction would be to sell dollars, right? But people bought dollars. And if you're talking about higher inflation, you would expect gold to go way up, right? But it went down. So on the news of higher than expected inflation, investors sold an inflation hedge, gold, and bought dollars. It doesn't make sense at all, at least not on the surface. But it does make sense given the market psychology, because pretty much everybody still believes the Fed is going to see the light, step in, and fight the inflation dragon. Tighter monetary policy is a signal for currency traders to buy dollars, and tighter monetary policy is generally considered a negative for gold. So the markets see this inflation. They don't really think it's transitory, but they do think the Fed can and will successfully fight it. Yeah, we might see some slowing of the economy. That's why stocks sold off. But, you know, overall, it's all going to be fine. The crazy thing is, it seems like the mainstream thinks the Fed can maybe taper its bond buying a bit and, you know, maybe push rates 50 or 100 basis points up, and that will stop inflation in its tracks. This is absurd. Let's say by year end, we have 7% inflation, just doubling what we've seen in the first 6 months of the year. So interest rates would still be at zero. That means the real interest rate would be minus 7%. In order to get real rates positive, the Fed would have to push rates up to 8, maybe 9%, right? Do you know the last time interest rates were at 8%? July 1990. So if this is really 1970s level inflation, it's going to take a lot more than a 50 basis point rate hike to deal with it. Do you remember how high Paul Volcker took rates before he finally tamed inflation in the early 80s? 20%. I'm not altogether certain that this economy could handle 1% interest rates given all of the debt in the economy. And one thing I can tell you for sure is not transitory is the government borrowing and spending. We got the June budget deficit numbers this week. The budget shortfall was really big again. Despite increased tax revenue flowing into the Treasury with tax day being later this year and an improving economy, the deficit was $174.16 billion. Uncle Sam spent over $600 billion in June. That's over $500 billion spent in just 1 month. The total spending for fiscal 2021 stands at $5.29 trillion with 3 months left to go. And of course, Biden wants to spend more money, so more debt, and the Fed is going to tighten? Yeah? No. So really, Powell's story is all the Fed has going for it. So he's sticking to it for all he's worth. Powell was up on Capitol Hill this week spinning his yarn. Despite all of the data that came out just the day before, Powell continued to insist inflation is, say it with me, transitory. Now, he did concede that inflation has increased notably. You think? It's been higher than projected every single month this year. Powell said the prices will likely remain elevated in the coming months before moderating. More significantly, Powell once again said it's too early to talk about tightening monetary policy. Although the economy has made progress, the Fed's benchmark of substantial further progress remains, quote, a ways off. He said, our strong guidance on interest rates and on our balance sheet will ensure that monetary policy will continue to deliver powerful support to the economy until the recovery is complete. Now, when asked what he means by substantial further progress in employment, Powell showed his hand. He basically admitted this is all BS when he said, it's a very difficult thing to be precise about. In other words, I'm not going to put any measurable criteria on this because I don't want to be held to it, because it really doesn't matter because we can't do crap about it anyway. Powell went on to explain, quote, it really is a very broad range of things. But he did promise the Fed, quote, will provide lots of notice before it considers tightening policy. The Fed chair also reassured the committee that if high inflation persisted and was threatening to uproot inflation expectations, we would absolutely change our policy as appropriate. But Powell gave no indication of just how long inflation has to be, quote, persistent before it's no longer transitory, or how high it actually needs to go before the Fed does something. The central bank has indicated it's comfortable letting inflation run, quote, moderately above its 2% target for, quote, some time. Representative Anthony Gonzalez actually asked Powell, how long is some time? The best answer Powell could come up with is, it depends. He said, right now, inflation is well above 2%. The question for the Federal Open Market Committee will be, where does this leave us in 6 months? Yes, Jerome, that's the question. What is the answer? You know, he's answering a question with a question. Well, the thing is, there isn't an answer. And that's the key. The real takeaway here, and it's important to remember this, Powell is all talk, talk, talk. Meanwhile, the Fed isn't doing anything. Rates are at zero. Bond buying continues unabated, just like it did as the pandemic was beginning. The extraordinary inflationary monetary policy is rolling right along, even as CPI runs hotter and hotter and hotter. Where will inflation actually be by the time the Fed caves and admits that this isn't transitory? You know, that's a pretty chilling thing to think about. So Powell is going to stick to his story as long as he possibly can. He's really got no choice. He can't do what it would take to actually fight inflation. Again, it would require interest rate hikes and monetary tightening that would crush whatever economic recovery that we've had. It would plunge us into a recession. I mean, quite frankly, the economy needs a recession to cleanse out all of the malinvestments and misallocations, but nobody wants to take that bitter medicine. So, as I said, at this point, the story is all Powell has got. So, are you ready for all of this? I really hope you're not following the crowd, selling gold and buying dollars. If you want some alternative advice, some different options, I highly recommend talking to a Shift Gold Precious Metals specialist today. Just call 1-888-GOLD-160, or you can email them at info@shiftgold.com. These guys are fantastic. They will look at your individual situation, your goals, your portfolio, and help you see how precious metals can help preserve your wealth in this inflationary environment, or if the Fed actually does do something about it, the economic recession that would almost certainly follow. So that is a gold wrap for this week. You can get more details on all of these stories and more, and keep up with the latest precious metals news and analysis throughout the week over at shiftgold.com/news. If you haven't done it already, you can subscribe to the Friday Gold Wrap over at iTunes or on the Shift Gold YouTube channel. We're also on Stitcher. You'll find links to all of this stuff over on the show notes page. I appreciate you listening to the show. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, and I'll talk to you next time.